Tonight at 8 p.m., a free recital is offered at Western Michigan University in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and it features just one artist, and that is my guest here, pianist Jeremy Siskind. Welcome back to WMUK.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Jeremy, you've put together a program of works by other composers, as well as a whole second half with some of your own compositions, and this must be rather tricky. You are already walking a tricky line of being prepared to teach and perform jazz piano as well as classical here at Western Michigan University.
Yeah, in a certain sense, it's really hard to do both. It's hard to do more than one thing well. But I think in the more powerful sense, hopefully they help each other out. You know, the skills that I learned practicing classical pieces and really working on details and expression on something that somebody else wrote, hopefully transfers into my own self-expression when I'm improvising or when I'm interpreting a jazz work, and vice versa. Hopefully the skills and the creativity, the ear training, the kinds of articulation that I learned playing jazz make my classical playing different than somebody who just plays classical piano as well.
Sometimes when I'm in the record library and putting together a program that flows, melodies just seem to come up from a well in my brain. I can hear the actual performances, and that's how it seems to come together really naturally. I wondered if that's a similar process for you when you work on one piece. Do other pieces suggest themselves like that?
Absolutely. Certainly. So I've constructed a program of pairings of songs that I feel go together. For numerous reasons. Sometimes it's a core emotion, sometimes it's a key, sometimes it's a melodic gesture, or a time signature, or a style, or a texture. So the hope is that I can use these pairings to point out what's unique in each, and what might be common unexpectedly between some pieces.
It's a little frustrating because you've come along and basically taken all of my best ideas for the last 20 years and stuck them on a program together, and who knows where you'll go next. This is, it's encouraging and like, well, I should have done that.
Well, there's still time. but I think there's so many connections that, you know, we would never consider. And so I really just like, I think it's fun to juxtapose these things. And, you know, to consider, for example, my first pairing is Schoenberg, who, you know, isn't necessarily everybody's favorite composer, but I'm going to marry it with the jazz standard Laura, which is a great mysterious song. Laura is the face in the misty light. And I think hopefully that standard can really bring out the wonderful languid mystery in Schoenberg, so that it won't sound quite so foreign as some people often feel that it does.
Well, you've given me the opportunity here to set up our first musical break. I picked out the original film version of Laura. I don't know how yours will sound. Might be a totally different adaptation, but this is the highly scored romantic version, and it's conducted by the composer David Raxon. Jeremy, that was the original film version of Laura, written and conducted there by David Raxon. And I wondered if it matches the conception you have for solo piano at all. I know that you're drawing from more than one influence here.
Yeah. Well, in some senses, it's such a neo-romantic piece. It's so filled with these extraordinary harmonies and kind of a simple melody, but the way that it interacts with the harmony is really kind of astounding.
Is that kind of a good thing when the melodic basis is simple so you can do more with it in other areas?
I think so, yeah. We'll see. It's good for me because I'm going to try to bring some Schoenberg into it. So since it has a strong melody, I can kind of play with the harmonies and get a little bit devious with those without totally interrupting the course of the song.
Well, that's kind of a thrilling opportunity, I imagine, for you, who recently put your improvisatory chops to the test in a competition, a jazz competition over in England. How long ago was that now?
I think that was in October, so about 6 months ago. Well, that's the Nottingham International Jazz Piano Competition.
Well, and I have to congratulate you on your first place win there.
Well, thank you.
Was that a gratifying thing?
It was surprising more than anything else. I'm still slightly in shock. I've done my fair share of jazz piano competitions now, and I've never been able to predict the outcome in any way. And so lose, win, it's always kind of surprising and, in this case, really humbling that for whatever reason, a group of judges decided to choose me over my peers. But I love doing the competitions because I always make a lot of friends. I meet a lot of pianists who I really stay in close touch with. And it was almost like a conference or a summit. I heard so much great music over the weekend in England. I think there were 12 pianists there between the ages of 20 and 35 who all just played spectacularly. So winning is great, but the experience is really what I'll remember forever.
Tonight's concert, free and open to the public. It's at 8 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and it's Mr. Siskind here, solo the whole time. But speaking of friends, you have some friends that you play with on this recording called Finger Songwriter, and it's one of the albums that you brought in when we first met, and I've grown to really love many of the songs on this record, but especially Vanished Music, Twilight,
the past tense of Twilight, of course.
And when you were talking about it before, you mentioned your love of literature and poetry, and that's very evident on this record.
Yeah, so I do have a master's degree in English and Comparative Literature after I pursued my undergraduate in music. I went to Columbia and got my master's in literature. And my secret dream is to write a novel, but I'm very far from achieving that dream. I can't seem to get anything started beyond a couple paragraphs or sentences. But a lot of my music ends up taking inspiration from great writers. And that song, Vanished Music, Twilight Water, was inspired by the great Northern Irish poet Seamus Heaney. And if you don't know anything about his poetry, it's, first of all, really gorgeous. And it's a lot of kind of natural landscapes. It somehow captures the richness and the lushness of the Irish world. Also, in particular, the poems that I base this on, a kind of pastoral nostalgia for simpler times, if you will. He's famous for writing about the bog people and kind of uncovering all of these layers of history and trying to imagine how things were for these people who were frozen in time. So those were kinds of some of the inspirations for this song.
Nancy Harms is heard singing on this recording. Is she a longtime collaborator?
Nancy and I have been working together for about a year or two, and you know, it was by total coincidence I happened to play on her first performance in New York City. And she gave me her CD, and I put it in my car, and it just stayed there. You know, it was one of those CDs that I just kept wanting to listen to. And finally, you know, I'd been dabbling with writing lyrics, and I can't sing worth anything. So I'd been looking for somebody who I could feel comfortable with, you know, essentially as my voice, lyrically and vocally. And so finally, after turning this CD over time after time, I said, all right, I want to give Nancy a chance. And we both really enjoyed our working relationship. And she's done a great job interpreting my lyrics.
I love the way she matches the tone and the straight tone of the clarinet on this track. Was that something you suggested she do, or something that she brought just naturally by hearing Lucas Pina on clarinet there?
Yeah, so we're really trying to think as chamber musicians as well as jazz musicians. And Nancy's kind of interesting because she was first trained as a choral singer. Her degree is in choral performance before she even explored jazz. And one of the things that I think she really excels in is really taking on the character of each piece. So I didn't necessarily have to direct her towards anything like, you know, straight tone, classical, or, you know, give us that Irish feeling or whatever. You know, she kind of naturally just assumed that character and really got involved in the piece.
Well, you're going to hear an absolutely heartbreaking octave jump she does right off the bat here. And let's, without further ado, listen to Vanished Music, Twilight Water. Lyrics of Seamus Heaney and music by my guest Jeremy Siskin.
Sings hallelujah. The nightingale sings hallelujah. While the soft peninsula sleet, the kingfishers blew apart at dusk. Her voice sweet but sad. But sad on the evening she sang
Vanished Music, Twilight Water, lyrics of Seamus Heaney, or I should say the poem is by Seamus Heaney, and you shaped it with your music, Jeremy, recorded it on the CD, Finger Songwriter, it's called. It's one of two CDs that you have, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And that was a title that you should know. The New York Times called Cringeworthy.
What? Finger Songwriter?
Yeah, they didn't enjoy the pun, I guess.
It doesn't make me cringe at all.
Okay, I'm glad.
In fact, I love the whole thing, and maybe it's because there is a classical influence there to my ear.
Absolutely,
the ability to take time with material. You're not forced into a 4/4 beat, and I do love the simplicity of it, and that's. Sometimes with a lot of jazz artists that are coming through the area and I preview their stuff, it's gotten so very complicated that my brain handles it for about 15 minutes and then it's like, no more. I need something.
Yeah, that's happened to me too.
A little quieter.
You know, I guess the concept behind that group is, you know, it's a chamber group essentially. So there are certainly a classical influence, a classical bent. We're improvising, so we have our jazz aspect, and then I really wanted it to have the spirit of the singer-songwriter movement. In terms of, I think there's kind of a confessional, personal nature to the songs, because I'm the one writing them and then performing them. And then I think I don't necessarily aim for simplicity, but I don't really, especially with this sort of music. I don't feel the need to become complicated. Hopefully we can just enjoy the lyrical presence and a good melody and a nice chord progression. And, you know, if the piece then requires some kind of complexity beyond that, you know, maybe we'll provide for it. But to me, I really enjoy a naked expression of just a, you know, a really lovely melody over lovely chords and not having to do too much more. I don't think we have to do that much more.
Well, because each of these pieces on Finger Songwriter has lyrics by a different poets, and you've adapted so many different moods. It strikes me that I should suggest that you put your novel aside and consider a musical drama of some kind. I think you could do a great things within that shape and with a larger narrative, too.
That is not something that that I've considered yet, but I will keep that in mind. You'll be the first to know.
Oh, thanks, Jeremy. Tonight's concert is at 8 o'clock for those of you who've just tuned in, and my guest here is Jeremy Siskind, and he'll be playing a lot of his own music on tonight's concert, and in the first half, his inspired pairings of music from classical composers as well as jazz composers, and that reflects your dual duties here at Western Michigan University as both a jazz pianist and classical instructor. And I wondered if you had, you know, it's been a few months since you started here at Western, and if you were feeling welcomed here in Kalamazoo and with the university community, everything's going okay?
I'm still alive, and now that the sun is out, all is well. it's amazing the depth of the musical community here, and just the extreme, the extremely huge amount of things that there are to do musically at Western in particular, and in Kalamazoo in general. Just Wednesday night, I went to the International Contemporary Ensemble concert, and you know, it was one of those things I had no idea it was even happening. And this is a world-class group. Until one of my colleagues stopped me in the hall and said, "Oh, are you going to this tonight?" I said, "I didn't even know about this." But the amount of things that that fall beneath the radar because there's just so much going on is really incredible. What a great source of wealth for the community. You know, how lucky everybody is.
And have you been on the road a lot this year? I know you went to Nottingham, England.
That's right. Probably the most significant other trip was just over our spring break in March. I took my band that you just heard, the piano, woodwinds, and voice ensemble, out to California. We did about 12 concerts in 10 days. It was busy. And we're proponents of house concerts. So I found, I think 10 of the concerts were inside people's homes. They open up their homes to us. They need to have a piano. And then we give a performance for them and about 20 of their friends. And we love doing this because people end up coming who wouldn't normally come to a concert of that sort. In fact, the best person we met, I think, was this metalhead. He had one of these beards that just went everywhere. everywhere a beard isn't supposed to go. And, you know, somebody invited him, he came, and it's funny, we've become Facebook friends now, and he keeps on telling me about all these jazz albums that he's just bought, because he'd never heard music like that before. And he said, "This is the greatest thing I've ever heard, I'm going to go buy all of your CDs." And then we recommended him to a couple other people, and now he's listening to instrumental acoustic jazz. Which isn't something that even crossed his radar. We've had people who have only listened to country music come to our performances and say, "This is my first experience hearing a piano, you know, in a live concert, and I loved it." So it's a really rewarding thing for us.
You must be attracted to the idea of house concerts for the reason possibly that that's how you would want to be introduced to new music, to go to someone's home and have that close connection.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, we make a point of meeting everybody at the concerts.
Yeah.
And clubs, there certainly are great clubs and there certainly are great concert halls. But a lot of times, you know, people can feel left out of that culture. It can be kind of almost a battleground of, "Oh, do I know when to applaud? Can I cough? Can I drink my glass of wine in here?" Whereas, you know, somebody invites you to their home and hopefully you feel comfortable. So I think it's a really great way to experience music, and we're planning many more house concerts, including a tour of the South in August. And in January, that group will be here in Michigan, and we're hoping to find some homes of nice people to play in.
Well, I can think of a few folks in the Kalamazoo area who not only have lovely pianos in their home, but would be very happy to have you. Another thing to ask about before we hear another tune is adapting to the new Western Jazz Quartet. I mean, it's a brand new ensemble with Tom Kniffick, who's been in the group the whole time. But all this new repertoire, getting used to drummer
Keith Hall
and Andrew Rathman on woodwinds and all of that. Tell me about this rebirth of the Western Jazz Quartet.
Well, it's funny. I might not have the perspective that you do because I didn't know the old Western Jazz Quartet. But the summary for me is that I feel so incredibly lucky to have a faculty group which is just filled with great world-class musicians, and B, we all get along really well, which, speaking to people from other faculties, is definitely not always the case. So we've become really tight-knit. We're doing a lot of service-oriented things and trying to recruit for the university. We recorded a little album in December that hopefully will be out maybe by the fall. And one of the pieces that's on the program I actually originally wrote for that album. It's called Lighter Than Air. So essentially for me, it's just been this amazing treat to get to play with these people day in, day out that I didn't know before. So it's really been wonderful.
Do you all share the writing duties?
To a degree. There are some pieces from the previous quartet that we're trying to keep in the repertoire, particularly pieces of Tom's. And Andrew Rathbun is a quite prolific composer. So he came with a lot of amazing pieces, and we'll be playing a lot of his music at the Union this next Thursday. And I brought some stuff in as well. And Keith, as a drummer, certainly some drummers are prolific composers, but that's not necessarily his favorite thing to do. So we do play a couple of his tunes. So I guess the answer is yes, we do all share the writing duties to different degrees.
Very good. Where would I find more information on next Thursday's concert? Probably at the School of Music website, or maybe at the Union.
I think it's just going to be at the Union's website.
Yeah. Well, for tonight's concert, you're on your own. It's at 8 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Do you do very many solo concerts?
I'm starting to do more solo concerts, and I'll never forget the first one that I played, and it was totally traumatic, really scary. I think it was my senior recital, just being on stage by myself the whole time. As jazz musicians, we're really used to, having a lot of interaction, but it's been really a source of pride that now I can play a whole solo recital without feeling terribly naked or feeling a lot of pressure. And I've done a few solo piano competitions, which has also helped kind of propel that state of my art. So it's one of my favorite ways to play because I have so much freedom. There's a lot of pieces that are going to involve free improvisation. There's a lot of pieces that I have no idea what's going to happen. and for me, if it's just me, I don't really have to worry about it too much.
Well, here you are with a couple of other musicians, bassist Chris Lightcap and drummer Ted Poor, and I picked this one off of your Simple Songs for When the World Seems Strange recording because it has, to me, a Kurt Weill, Bertolt Brecht kind of German feel to it, German jazz of the 1930s, which you can completely disallow, but that's what I thought it was fun, and it's going to pick things up a bit.
Okay, we could use it.
It's called Firstness. That's a tune by Jeremy Siskin called Firstness. And it's from Simple Songs for When the World Seems Strange. Not on tonight's program, but it was a special pick of mine while Jeremy is here at WMUK. And you're performing tonight at 8 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. More information, including the full program, is online at the School of Music website, wmish.edu/music, where you can find out everything about what's going on at the School of Music, which is, there's something almost every single night.
It's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah. Thanks for that tune. And we're going to be leaving with another tune that is on the program. And what did I pick again? Yes, The Inevitable Letdown.
Inevitable Letdown, that's right.
I can't remember if you told me this or am I making it up, but does this have to do with Lucy removing the football from Charlie Brown?
I don't think so. No? But I do like that image.
Maybe there's something Giraldi-esque about it.
Giraldi-esque. I'm not sure I've been described as Giraldi-esque before. So the idea behind this piece is a feeling that I kept having, that maybe you've had too, that if there's something that you're looking forward to, a performance often for me, or a visit with somebody, or a trip, even if that thing is wonderful and, fabulous, afterwards, I always get low, and I miss having that thing to look forward to. Half of the joy of it is having the anticipation. So inevitably, I kind of look at my calendar and I say, oh, there's this fun thing in April. I know that right after that, I'm not going to feel so good. I'm going to miss having that thing to look forward to. So I kind of had this mental image of this, too, as kind of an old cabaret, maybe like post-war Germany, windows battered down, a couple regulars smoking at their regular tables, and wine stains all over the floor. So that's how I kind of conceived of this feeling. And so I tried to write music that I thought would fit in that setting.
Well, before we go on with this tune, I wanted to say thank you for coming in, and you've been so generous with your time this morning.
It's always a pleasure.
Got some warming up to do, I suppose,
that's
for tonight. And if you had any final thoughts you'd like to pass along, now would be a good time.
Come tonight is my main final thought. So it'll be fun. There's pairings of classical and jazz works. I'm trying to bring out some elements of both that and have them talk to each other. And then the second half will just be fun. It'll be very free, having me improvise, essentially. So hope to see you there.
Well, from my perspective, I've really enjoyed getting to know your music over these last few months. And I think for listeners who like to be in on the beginning of something, or the getting to know an artist maybe before the rest of the world does, this, you're almost not too late, and tonight would be your chance to see Jeremy in person and make that connection, and then be able to follow his future projects. That's what I plan to do. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And let's listen to Charlie Brown song, The Inevitable Letdown.
Light yourself a cigarette, my boy. Light it with the stars. And comb your hair with reams of moon. Gather from afar.